Support for The Exchange podcast comes from you, our listeners, and from McLean Middleton, New Hampshire's largest law firm. For over 100 years, they've been committed to their clients, community, and colleagues. Locations in Manchester, Portsmouth, and Concord, New Hampshire, and Woburn and Boston, Massachusetts. Learn more at McLean.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The New Hampshire legislature is back at work, and over the next 6 months, lawmakers will examine familiar issues, including family leave, guns, voting, energy, marijuana, to name just a few. In addition to these replays from 2019, are some new debates on taxes, for example, and lots of constitutional amendments aimed at getting on that 2020 ballot. Today in The Exchange, a panel of state lawmakers looks ahead to the new year. And let's hear from you. What do you hope the legislature does and doesn't do this year? Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our lawmakers are State Senators Donna Soucie, Senate President, and a Democrat from Manchester. And Senator Soucie, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
And also Senator Chuck Morse. He's Senate Minority Leader, a Republican from Salem. Senator Morse, Happy New Year. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also, House members include Steve Shurtleff, Speaker of the House and a Democratic representative from Panacook. And Speaker Shurtleff, welcome back. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And also with us, Sherman Packard, Deputy House Republican Leader and a Republican representative from Londonderry. And Representative Packard, good to see you. Thank you also for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, I'd like to just go down the line and starting with you, Senator Soucie, and ask you broadly, what are you thinking about most as a lawmaker as the State House gets back to work?
I think there are a number of issues we're going to focus in on. We're going to look at the high cost of prescription drugs and trying to create more transparency in pricing and curb some of those skyrocketing costs. We're looking at the cost of education, particularly higher education, and trying to ensure more affordability for our students, particularly those that attend community colleges and state universities. And we're also going to be looking at addressing the impact of climate change in various ways.
Wow, big issues. Go ahead, Senator Morse. What's tops on your mind?
Well, we have a great economy, and I want to make sure that it keeps rolling in New Hampshire. I certainly want to make sure we're not putting any tax models in place. And now that we've just passed a budget that we can all agree on, I don't think we should be looking at spending this year. So I think those are things we're going to actually protect against.
How about you, Speaker Shurtleff?
Well, I'd agree with Senator Morse and President Soucie with the items that they mentioned. You know, there are some things like biomass, net metering, groundwater contamination, family leave. But as a former committee chair, I'm looking more at what comes up from the committee process and what the policy committees send to the floor.
So as Speaker of the House, you're kind of waiting to see what bubbles up from all those 400 House members.
Exactly.
Speaker Shurtleff. Yeah, how about you, Representative Packard?
Well, I think in the House we have something like 625 bills that we've got to muddle through. And I've looked at a lot of them, but there's still a lot of them we have to look at and digest. But, I mean, I think that one of the main issues we have for Republicans is making sure that no new taxes or fees are instituted, hurting our economy in the future.
Well, and I want to ask all of you about a theme that I kept reading about when I was preparing for the show yesterday, and then we'll dive into some of these specifics that you all mentioned. And again, to you, Senator Soucie, the line that I kept reading was, this year is going to be a replay of last year. The democratically controlled House and Senate will pass bills, and the governor will veto them, and it's just the same old, we've seen this movie before. So what do you think about that assessment?
Well, I think there are going to be some issues that we're going to revisit, issues that were very popular, not just in the legislature, but that are popular in the electorate. One of them is redistricting, creating an independent redistricting committee so that people can choose their politicians, not politicians, their people. That legislation continues to move through the process. The governor has already vetoed it, but he's going to see it again because it enjoys such broad support. There were a number of other issues like paid family medical leave that continue to remain very important to all of us and that are part of, I think, strengthening our economy and attracting younger people and workers to the state that we will continue to visit.
Why not, Senator Susie, just move on to another issue or another approach that the governor and Republicans might be more comfortable with? Why keep just replaying these same bills over and over again?
Well, they're not the exact same bills. I think
different
with respect
approaches
to paid family medical leave in particular, we acknowledge that the governor had made some proposals wanting to have a public-private partnership, wanting more evaluation of the financial impact of paid family leave medical program. But the principle remains the same, and that is that when people are sick or have a very sick loved one, they shouldn't be threatened with losing their job if they're not able to be there for a limited period of time.
Speaker Shurtleff, what do you think? How much is 2020 going to be a replay of 2019?
Well, as we know, the governor set a record of 57 vetoes, which was 40 more than the previous record of Governor Lynch at 17. And my conversations with the governor are normally private, but I did tell the governor, I mentioned to the governor, that it might be helpful to both the executive branch and the legislative branch if early on he sees a bill or his staff sees a bill in a policy committee to talk to the chair, talk to committee members, and see if they can't make changes to that bill before it comes up to for a vote on the floor.
So get that work done before.
Get it done early instead of just putting in a sack and waiting till the end of the session to veto it. Work with the legislature early on.
Senator Morse, where do you expect to find common ground with Democrats this year that maybe you didn't find last year?
Oh, I think we've found a lot of common ground on mental health and issues like that. We've done a lot in this state. That budget that we just passed, I think, works for everyone in the state. It may be more spending than someone like myself is used to, but I think we've done a lot there. I think our concerns going into this session are exactly what I started with. I'm very concerned that we're going to try to build the next budget with tax models in this, session, and that won't work for the Republicans.
Representative Packard, how about you? There are issues that most Granite Staters seem to care about, no matter what their party. Healthcare costs, we hear a ton about that. Housing, we hear a lot about that. These seem to be bipartisan concerns. And I wonder where you think you might find common ground with Democrats this year.
Well, I think we're always working on those issues. I mean, I think we all realize that healthcare costs are a problem. And I think we all realize that affordable housing is a cost. And we do have some bills in this year's session to try and address those issues. How they'll actually end up is, again, going through the committee process and making compromises. I mean, the fact of the matter is probably about 80% of the legislation that the House and the Senate work on is bipartisan. It's all the controversial stuff that makes all the headlines that everybody reads about and doesn't really realize that in many, many cases, we work together and work for the better of the citizens of New Hampshire.
So what examples can you give us? That's really interesting. And I think you're right. The headlines are always about the fights, not about the bipartisan compromises.
Well, there's
so many.
Hundreds of bills that, the different committees work on and come up with a suitable solution to whatever that particular bill is.
Sure. Speaker Shurtleff, do you have a favorite example from what
Well, maybe Representative not so much Packer a favorite example, about. But just to build on what Sharon mentioned, we just had a two-day House session. We got 3 days' worth of work done in 2 days. We dealt with 150 bills, but 90 of those bills were on our consent calendar. No debate. They were all passed unanimously by the House. The other 60 bills, some maybe 10 were contentious, but the other ones, debates on both sides and went to a vote without much fanfare. So as Sharon has said, there's a lot of bipartisanship in the New Hampshire House.
I got lots of emails in advance of the show, Facebook comments from our listeners who told us what they want you folks to focus on this year. I invite your comments at 1-800-892-6477 or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or tweet us, comment on Facebook. Again, our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Senator Susie, you mentioned drug prices right at the outset. Here's an email from Richard, who says, my volunteer efforts with AARP have exposed me to the magnitude of the prescription drug price problem. New Hampshire cannot solve all of the prescription drug issues, but my understanding is the legislature does have 3 bills in this 2020 session. Richard says one would allow prescription drugs to be imported from Canada. Another would require more transparency in how prescription drugs are priced. And the third, he says, would regulate mid-year changes to Medicare Part D formulary. He asks you specifically, actually, can you prioritize these bills? And Richard, thank you very much.
Those three, and there are additional bills dealing with some of the functioning of pharmacy benefit managers, prohibiting price gouging. There's a whole package of bills. And I should also mention that there is a bill to require pharmacy benefit managers to pass on the rebates from the big drug companies directly to the insurer or the insured. I think transparency is probably one of the biggest issues, helping people to make more informed choices about the drugs that they purchase and having conversations early on with their doctor, with their provider, to ensure that they're getting the appropriate level of treatment, but that they understand the limitations of their health care plan. But certainly pulling the curtain back, transparency, I think, continues to be one of the biggest issues. And I think we recognize that some of the issues around drug prices are federal. We can't do them alone here in New Hampshire, but I think we're going to make every effort that we can to really pull back the curtain and make sure that people are informed about what drugs really cost and how we can maintain
them. Yeah, I was curious about that because it does seem like drug prices are largely set by these global corporations and by the federal government. I just wonder how much control a state can really have.
There are a number of things that we can do. We did just pass legislation. It was sponsored by Representative Ed Butler to create a model similar to Vermont's to also look at transparency. There is the ability to create a prescription drug affordability board. That's one piece of legislation to determine annual public payer spending targets for prescription drugs and develop policies and procedures for the collection of drug price data so that we can drill down a little more. But I do think it's an issue that not only here in New Hampshire, but around the country continues to plague a lot of people.
Sure, and something that comes up a lot in the presidential campaign. Richard, thank you for the email. And let's take a call. Bev's calling from where? Hi, Bev. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I, too, have a great deal of concern about the cost of prescription drugs in our state. I'm a volunteer at a healthcare agency, and I have recently had my own personal experience with needing high-cost medications. And the folks in our state are rationing their meds or suffering devastating financial circumstances because of the high cost of their drugs, often to the point where they're either needing to make choices between food, heat, medications and healthcare. So I would just want to ask, you know, the folks that you are interviewing today, as well as the governor, to please support any effort to attempt to relieve these burdens on our citizens.
Thank you very much for the call, Bev. And Senator Morse, sort of the same question I asked to you, Senator Susi, what really can a state do about high drug prices?
Well, I think, first of all, the most important thing that we have to do in the legislature is set priorities. I mean, there's been no doubt in New Hampshire that as we've dealt with mental health, as we dealt with the waiting list, we've set those priorities. I think when it comes to drugs and seniors, it should be a priority far beyond things like Family Leave Act. If we're going to talk about how we're going to make things better for citizens in New Hampshire, you know, we can't do everything. And I think that's part of the discussion that comes into the second year of a session, because we just did the big thing. We passed the budget. Now I think we have to control how we're, you know, putting our priorities in place. And I do believe this is an area that people want us to put our priorities.
Got a couple comments from listeners about education as well. So let's pivot to that. Sarah says education funding is on the top of her list for lawmakers this year. Andrea also says education funding. Our residents are struggling to shoulder the growing burden of school funding the state has passed to them. And Lisa has a slightly different question about education. She says charter schools or private schools disguised as public, they are stripping funding from public school budgets, so must be curtailed. Thanks to all those listeners for jumping in on that issue. And I think Representative Shurtleff, to you first on education funding, and then I want to ask separately about charter schools.
Sure.
My understanding is the legislature has a new education funding commission that began its work just this week. We've seen these commissions before, committees, special blue ribbon panels. How is this different?
I think the quality of the people that are working have been appointed by both the House and the Senate is extraordinary. David Luno, Representative Luno from Hopkinton, will be chairing that commission. And I'm very impressed by the people that have been willing to step forward and work on this issue. School funding is probably one of the primary issues in the state. I'm proud of the fact in the last budget, we pushed to put over $210 million more to go back to local communities to help with school funding, to provide property relief for local citizens, especially those on fixed income, us who in the baby boom generation that are now living in, trying to stay in their homes, but their rising property taxes are making it harder and harder. So we've got to do something to provide more state assistance to local communities and to help bring down the cost of education. And I expect big things out of this commission.
So the last budget, correct me if I'm wrong, did give a fair amount of assistance to schools. So what more is needed, or what's the big goal of this commission?
Well, I think that was a one-time expenditure for the legislature to say to local communities and local property taxpayers, we know what you're facing. And especially in poorer communities that don't have the resources to fund the local schools, to give them an influx of money to bring their schools up and get the things done that not the wants but the needs. And now we've got to look forward to going forward with this commission to see, are we funding schools the way they should be funded? Is there another way to do it without doing it on the backs of local property taxpayers?
Representative Packard, what are your hopes or concerns about this commission, this new education funding commission? Again, we've, you know, been around this issue for a long time.
Well, I mean, you always hope that when you put something like this together, it comes up with some solid answers. But let's be honest. It's the cities and the towns that are the ones that vote on what their school budget is going to be. The state doesn't vote on an individual city or town and what its school budget is going to be. So it's up to the town, the local communities, to make sure that they keep control of their budget. I mean, I can tell you alone in my community, Londonderry, you know, every year the budget just keeps going up and up and up, even though we're way down on the amount of students we're putting through the system. So I think if we're going to be honest about this and we're going to really look at it, everything has to be put on the table.
Senator Susie, can you address that as well? We hear, you know, calls for more funding from the state for local schools, but Representative Packard also reminds us that New Hampshire is facing a demographic change, and there are a lot fewer kids in the schools. Concord, where I live, went from 8 elementary schools, you know, a decade ago, down to 5. So there are fewer students filling those slots.
There are certainly demographic changes in certain parts of the state, but I think there's also a recognition that there are certain parts of the state that are economically challenged and have more difficulty raising money from their property taxpayers than others, and those differences, I think, continue to exacerbate. I do think that the work of the previous commission about 12 years ago was significant, and I think the fact is if we had actually fully funded and fully implemented the plan that was developed then, I think we'd be in a very different place right now. I think we have, over the years, continued to refuse to acknowledge that the disparities are so significant that certain communities deserve more help than others.
And the state is facing a lawsuit now, so maybe there's pressure on that end as well create this commission and have it work on this issue once again. So coming up, Senator Morse and others, I'll ask you what you think about the comment I read from Lisa about charter schools, because I know that's been an issue with that big grant that was rejected from the federal government. And we'll take a lot more of your comments. It's great to hear from listeners what you want the legislature to accomplish this year. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can comment on Facebook. You can tweet us. Or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. More with our panel of State House leaders in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, four state lawmakers are here looking ahead to the new year at the State House. Let's hear from you. What do you hope the legislature does and doesn't do this year? Let us know by email, exchange@nhpr.org. Tweet us, comment on Facebook, call 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, two state senators, Donna Soucy, Senate President and a Democrat from Manchester, Chuck Morse, Senate Minority Leader and a Republican from Salem. Also, two House members are here, Steve Shurtleff, Speaker of the House and a Democratic Representative from Penacook, and Sherman Packard, Deputy House Republican Leader and a Republican Representative from Londonderry. And all of you, just before the break, I read a couple Facebook comments from our listeners about education. And Senator Morse, to you, the one from Lisa, who says charter schools are private schools disguised as public, stripping funding from public school budgets, so must be curtailed. I know there's been a lot of debate at the State House about this 40-some-odd million-dollar grant that the federal government wants to give New Hampshire to establish more charter schools. And I wonder what you think about that and about Lisa's comment.
Well, first of all, I think the legislature spoke loudly a long time before this about charter schools. They supported them. They certainly wanted them to happen in New Hampshire, and they've been a huge success for the state of New Hampshire. And as we talk about them being a public or not public school, they're a public school. I mean, there's no doubt about that. We have 1,300 children that want to go into these schools that we don't have space for right now, one reason or another. And as we talked about this $46 million grant, listen, the commissioner has tried to come up with creative ideas to help solve the problem for those 1,300 students and other students that we've heard from 20 different administrators want to make something happen to make education work for them. So I think we need to get back to why we all voted for charter schools in the first place. And as we talk about the funding for that or anything else, I think all of us need to be on the street, not just one group that's trying to find a solution and go to all our different towns and talk and not have any rebuttal about how we fund education in New Hampshire and whether charters are good or public schools are good. I think we all need to be on the street. I think that's so important because there's no discussion about changing the formula, which I heard the speaker mention, on maybe we're not funding it right. Well, to me, that means income tax. And I'm certain if I go to my district and talk about an income tax, that's not going to be where they want to change things to. So there's a lot to talk about, but I think in the second year, we have more time. We should be on the road talking to the citizens and finding out how they want to address these things.
Speaker Shurtleff, can you briefly address the concerns that Senator Morse raises over charter schools?
Certainly. But first, let me put Senator Morse's mind at ease. When I talked about alternative means of funding schools, I definitely was not talking about an income tax or a sales tax.
But there is a bill for an income tax, right? If it were put in a lockbox, quote unquote, for
I don't think has much chance of passing based on past legislative actions. That's my guess for the future. But on charter schools itself, recently the fiscal committee tabled a bill that would have provided $10 million to start up new charter schools. And I think they did the right thing in tabling that bill. There are a lot of questions that were asked of the Commissioner of Education, and he did a good job answering them as best he could. But we've had charter schools that have failed. And this extra money going into new charter schools, that's something the public is going to have to pay part of the tab for going forward. The other issue is we've had schools that have failed, and we've got to realize why they failed. Some of the schools aren't meeting their requirement to provide some of their own funding. So there's a lot of questions about the charter school system. I believe in the charter school system, especially for the, I'd like to see more charter schools for young men and women that want to get into the building trades, being the son of a plumber. But there's a need, but we've got to look at where this money is going, and are we getting the best bang for the buck? And so I think the fiscal committee should be applauded for doing the right thing in that instance. But as we go forward, we need to look at the charter school system and the impact they're having on the public, the mainline public school system. And is there a better way to have oversight over these charter schools?
I got a lot of questions from listeners before the show today about the environment, and I want to share a couple of them with you. Io says, I'd love to see them come out very strongly for the environment. Clean air, water, and land have to come first. if we hope to be able to continue to argue about all the hot button issues. Brendan also said sustainable energy, giving more power to cities and towns to generate wind and solar power. There's a lot to talk about with the environment this year for sure. And I think I'm going to turn to you first, Representative Packard, on Brendan's point, sustainable energy, cities and towns to generate wind and solar power. There's been a lot of discussion in the legislature about municipalities and whether they can generate their own power. There's been a lot of debate over something called net metering, which we can get into. But just broadly, what would you like to see happen on this front?
Well, I think we have to be realistic. I don't think there's anybody sitting here at the table isn't for a clean environment, clean water. I personally live next to a Superfund site back in the 70s. So I'm very familiar with, having contaminated soil and a contaminated dump. But the fact of the matter is, wind and solar aren't going to solve our problems. If we want, the idea that we're going to put up a bunch of windmills and we're going to put some solar panels in and that's going to get rid of all oil and that's going to get rid of all gas and everything else is just a fallacy. So if we're going to be true to what we need to do, we got to look at everything. We got to look at nuclear. We got to look at all those things down the road, which are clean energy. And we got to look at hydro and all that other stuff. So I think if we're going to move forward in a realistic manner to make sure that we continue to help clean up the state and the planet, everything has to be on the table, and we can't just keep talking about one or two particular issues.
Well, and we will definitely do more shows down the line and have done multiple shows in the past on all those alternatives that you talk about. We did a whole show recently on nuclear. We've looked extensively at hydro, wind, solar, and so forth. So, Senator Susie, real quick, and then we'll move on to a couple other points that our listeners made.
Just real quick on the issue of net metering.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
That's an issue that has broad municipal support, has bipartisan support, and I don't hear many people saying it's going to create the elimination of the use of all fossil fuels, but it's certainly a move in the right direction.
Can you just briefly explain what that is? Because it's a big issue.
So, it's to expand solar power. So, for example, the city of Manchester at one point wanted to put a solar array on our now closed landfill. But there's a limited capacity statewide that people can use the power and get money back for generating their own energy. So the legislation that we're talking about would expand from 1 megawatt to 5, the capacity for people to create their own energy and get money for it.
So you get that benefit, a little bit of a benefit from the utility company. Right now it's at 1. The idea of expanding it to 5 means, Senator Susie, correct me if I'm wrong, that cities and towns, schools, and so forth could get involved in this beyond
Absolutely.
Just your homeowner, your regular
Absolutely.
Homeowner.
And save local taxpayers money in the long run on their energy costs.
And my understanding was this had some bipartisan support last time around. Is
it
that
had
correct?
Extensive bipartisan support, but was vetoed by the governor.
Okay, so I can see you want to jump in, Speaker Shurtleff.
I just want to mention, you mentioned biomass, and I just want to say how disappointed I was at that veto. There was truly a bipartisan piece of legislation. I can remember attending a rally on the State House grounds of woodland owners led by Tommy Thompson, Mel Thompson's son, explaining why that was so important to our environment and to our economy. First of all, it's a sustainable energy coming from wood. It had 8 plants in operation providing jobs, especially in the North Country. It was putting energy back into the grid. And I'd love to see that come back and finally get passed and have the governor get on board.
That was a close one, right?
Very close.
Yeah, that was. But the issue, and again, there were a lot of bills, so correct me if I'm wrong,
sure.
please. The issue was that the governor's concern was that this provided a subsidy to these biomass plants and that he didn't feel like ratepayers should have to subsidize certain forms of energy.
There was a minor subsidy being paid to provide this form of energy. But I think in the long range, it's better for our economy, better for our environment. We have people for generations in New Hampshire that worked in the woods. And now those jobs are going away. And this was an excellent way of providing energy and providing jobs.
Well, and on the environment, Nancy says, I'd like to know what they will do to stop climate change. None of the rest will matter if we don't take action now. Stop hiding behind the idea of no new fees or taxes. Let's see some compromise on this. So lots of comments from our listeners on the environment. I got a couple comments from listeners, too, on the issue of marijuana. Here's Joseph, who says, get with the times and end cannabis prohibition of all kinds. New Hampshire, he says, will be the poorest state in the country if the sums of money that are pouring out of New Hampshire into neighboring states every day for legal cannabis products continues. He says it's not slowing down. It's getting faster by the day. I don't care if you think it's a bad idea to legalize. It's an eventuality. And Joseph, thank you very much. And Senator Morse, I'm going to throw this to you first. I know, I'm guessing marijuana legalization is on the docket for this year. Where do you think this is going to go?
Well, I think there's a lot of people that believe like you have there on your paper, but I don't think that's where the state of New Hampshire should head. I mean, you know, one of the things that no one talks about, and I just was away on vacation talking about this, you know, the government gets involved in legalizing marijuana and the government gets involved in another tax scheme. And what happens to the price? I mean, we're hearing the fact that marijuana is going up from $200 an ounce to $300 an ounce because the government got involved with it. So where are they actually buying their marijuana? Probably not in the model that's being built by the government. They're probably doing it outside. So I think there's all kinds of reasons why I don't believe it should happen. I don't think you've addressed any of the liability problems that I see in society by legalizing it. I certainly believe small businesses are going to have a real challenge with how they protect themselves in that situation, and it's going to drive up costs on insurance. I think there's a lot to think about instead of just saying we're going to legalize it.
So just to clarify, Senator Moore, so you're saying that in states that have legalized, they've said, oh, great, this is a source of tax revenue, hiked the taxes up so much that people just end up going to the black market? Is that what you're saying?
I think they hiked the taxes up just because they believe that's the model they should create. I think they see that, you know, as we're going to legalize it and we put a tax model behind it. You know, it's the same thing happened with cigarettes and, you know, it'll happen with anything else that the government gets involved with like that. And I just think, you know, what the caller's saying is basically, you know, let's just legalize it and not have any rules. Well, is that a better scheme than the government running everything? I don't believe we should be in the marijuana business as a state.
Representative Packard, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is something that I've been looking at for a while. I mean, I voted for medical marijuana. I think that was the right thing to do. But to legalize marijuana completely, if you really look at what's happened in this western states, Colorado, Washington State, and a few others, the social costs are now starting to rise drastically from massive marijuana use. And that didn't happen at the beginning. They talked about all the tax dollars they got. I talked to one of the former speakers of the Colorado House a number of years ago, and she said that our social costs are going way up because of this. Now, one other thing I want to bring forward is at this particular time, we have absolutely no way to address somebody driving under the influence of marijuana. We know they're under the influence of drugs, but there's no way to test it like there is for a DWI test. And I can tell you that if you go out into those western states where there's massive use, you're going to see a lot of people driving under the influence of marijuana with no real way to test it. And that is a real problem, a real problem.
Well, Joseph, thank you for writing in. And the great thing about our show today is it gives us all sorts of ideas to follow up on with a further full show down the line. So we'll set that aside for the moment. Alan wrote us saying he wants to see red flag laws, especially in light of the threats of violence made this week to women legislators who back such laws. Let's talk about red flag laws. These are present in a number of states, not widely, but can you, Senator Susie, first of all, just remind listeners what a red flag law is?
Well, the red flag laws do exist around the country, 17 states. Maine and New Hampshire are the only ones that don't have red flag laws. But
in New England, you mean?
Excuse me. Maine and New Hampshire are the only ones in New England. That's correct. Yes, Laura. But I think common sense gun legislation is what people are looking for. There were a package of bills, most recently the red flag bill, but other reforms such as background checks and waiting periods that 80% of the people, including gun owners, support that were passed early on in both the House and Senate and were vetoed by the governor.
I'd love your thoughts, too, Senator Morse, on this. Actually, I want to hear from everybody on this because this is an issue that's being discussed around the country. We sat down a couple months ago with the co-author of an FBI study who said shooters often display common concerning behaviors before they attack. He said this presents opportunities to intervene before the to prevent one of these tragedies. I wonder what you think. I want to hear from everybody on this. Go ahead, Senator Morris. Red flag laws, how do you feel?
Well, in general, we have one of the safest states in the nation. I mean, so I'm with the governor on this. I think New Hampshire has policed itself for years. I think we've respected the rights of gun owners. And, you know, we put in concealed carry and we were told the sky was going to fall. The sky has not fallen in New Hampshire. So I think it's important for us in New Hampshire to realize, and the governor says this all the time, we govern in the 603 area code. We are not governing the nation. And right now it's working in New Hampshire, and I see no reason to change anything.
Speaker Shurtleff.
Last week, the House passed narrowly a red flag bill here in New Hampshire, and we'll be sending it on to the Senate. Senator Morse is right. We have one of the safest states in the nation. But we realize the murder rate is going up, and half of those murders committed are domestic violence related. As someone who is a licensed hunter and a gun owner and one-time member of the NRA, I support the red flag bill, as President Trump has said he does. We know people with mental health issues are buying weapons, and sadly, a lot of times it's not to commit mass murder or murder at all, it's to take their own lives. And if we can find a way to stop that and get them to help the mental health treatment that they really need and they deserve, I think it's the right way to go.
This big issue is being talked about nationally. So, Representative Packard, I'd love your thoughts on this too, please.
Well, I think we all realize that if somebody has mental health issues, they probably shouldn't own a gun. But this red flag bill goes much further than that. I mean, if you're my neighbor and you get mad at me, you could call up and say, I have a mental health issue, and all of a sudden my guns are gone. And they say, yeah, well, you can get them back in 6 months or a year. Well, and then it's going to cost you thousands of dollars, even though you have done nothing wrong. And I want to bring up that I think there's three or four bills that were vetoed by the governor, gun bills, that have been brought back again this year.
So you're skeptical of the judicial proceedings associated with this? You think they're
not just the judicial proceedings, but the fact that the matter is that, you know, there could be many false reports given to have somebody's guns taken away.
Speaker,
and that's a real concern.
Senator Susie, I did want to ask you, Alan said he favors red flag laws, especially in light of the threats of violence made this week to women legislators who back such laws. Do you know what he's talking about there?
I'm sorry.
You
I'm
had not,
not
heard about that.
No,
okay.
I did not.
All right, Alan, thank you very much for the comment. Lots of other comments from our listeners. Mary in Concord says she wants you all to address property taxes. She says property taxpayers are struggling, especially in towns with low property values. Would Republicans consider a new, fairer kind of tax to fund some state obligations, knowing that such a move would lead to reduced property taxes? Mary, thank you very much. And Senator Morse, it's a perennial issue.
It's a perennial issue that goes back to what I believe New Hampshire stands for. And we've passed legislation this past year that I'm concerned about. If we don't let the local communities make their own decisions, it'll change the face of New Hampshire completely. And I think it's so important that we make sure that they can make decisions on what they want their communities to look like, whether they want commercial development or they don't want commercial development. I think all of that matters, and I think it's important to keep it that way.
Commercial development, again, bringing in more taxes. So you're saying that's a choice that can be made at the local level.
Yes.
Coming up, more comments from our listeners. I've got questions about ATVs for all of you, questions about hunting, also a question about commuter rail. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Franklin Savings Bank has been a supporter of New Hampshire Public Radio for many, many years.
Don Beers is head of marketing for Franklin Savings Bank and a proud NHPR underwriter.
For us, it was important to attract those who choose to live, work, and play in the communities that we serve.
Learn more about how to connect with NHPR's community-minded audience at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow, we depart from American politics and go to Britain with the uproar over Megxit and Brexit. That's tomorrow morning, live at 9. This hour, four state lawmakers are here with a preview of the year ahead at the State House. And we've been hearing from you. We've been taking your comments and questions about what you want New Hampshire state lawmakers to focus on this year. We've heard a lot from you about health care, housing, taxes, the environment, and so forth. Keep those comments coming in, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also comment on Facebook or tweet us if you'd like. And all of you, here's a comment from Gary, who says, I'm watching HB 683, reasonable legislation, Gary says, which would give abutters notice about the opening of public roads to OHRVs. Basically ATVs, a lot of us call them, and require selectmen to hold a public hearing. Gary says, who wouldn't want to be notified that your town road is going to have a major change in use? Gary, we will do a whole program about this down the line for sure, but I'm really glad you raised the issue today. And Representative Packard, I want to start with you. Just can you remind us what the sort of tension is around ATVs?
Well, a lot of it is it's up in the North Country. I mean, ATVs and snowmobiling and that kind of thing up in the North Country is vital to the economy up there. And we've opened some of the roads up in the North Country to allow ATVs to proceed down them in certain ways. And, of course, they've got to cross to go from different paths.
So they can access Ride the Wilds and Jericho State Park and
right.
so forth.
But a lot of neighbors that are near that, feel that their lives are being disrupted because of this. So it is an issue. I think we've got six bills this year on ATV use and road use and anything else. And there's also another question that's coming up is, what are we going to allow on the roads? Earlier last year, we got a request to allow golf carts on the roads if they were made legal. I put a bill in to a bipartisan bill to try and put a commission together to see if we can sit down with all the parties involved, people from the North Country, the Department of Safety, Department of Fish and Game, Department of Transportation, and come up with something. It's going to be a struggle, but you're also talking about farm plates and agricultural plates, and you're talking about all these things that have been issues for years. Hopefully, we can come up with some solutions this year that'll be fair and equitable to everybody.
That's really interesting. So six bills on ATVs and other sort of alternative uses of the roads. Are the golf cart drivers saying, hey, look, if the ATVs can go out on the road, why not us? Is that what they're saying? Someone's calling him on his cell phone about that.
Sound effects.
It's an important issue.
I had it on silent. I don't know what happened.
That's fine, Representative Packard. No problem.
So
the golf carts are saying, why not us?
This was a person that sells them.
Okay.
That wants to say that he can make them legal for the road and put them on the road. And I've talked to the speaker about this in the past. And so safety came to us and said, we've got all these requests, and now we've got flying cars that are coming out. We've got a vehicle made by Mahindra that looks like a mini Jeep, costs $20,000. But it can't be put on the road. So what do you do with it? And there's numerous other things that we really have to take a look at and try and figure out.
And I have read that there's, pardon me if I'm not getting this quite right, the concern over or a bill concerning a road usage tax, where instead of paying gas taxes, you pay for the amount of miles that you drive. Is that something that you're keeping an eye on?
That's a bill we've had for a number of years. And that's a different subject matter that has to do with electric and battery-powered cars and stuff like that, that they're not paying enough for the highway, going into the highway fund. And I can tell you that the highway funds are going down year after year. And back in the last year of President Bush's administration, they started putting $8 billion into the federal highway fund back then. And every year it's risen. So this is not only a state problem, but a national problem.
Sure. And Speaker Shurtleff, I'd love your thoughts on some of the transportation issues that Representative Packard raises. It's real interesting.
Yeah, I've got a lot of respect for Representative Packard as part of his leadership position now, but he's the past chair of the Transportation Committee and still serves on that committee and does an outstanding job. And it's probably one of the most bipartisan committees in the House. I think he's raised a lot of concerns, the idea of more maybe possibly some substandard vehicles being on our public ways is a concern. I think it needs to be addressed.
Representative Wayne Moynihan from Dummer up in the North Country had a bill in to provide greater protection for landowners from ATVs, and that was narrowly defeated. But it's a concern among residents in the North Country. They love to have the ATVs coming up there to use Jericho and other trails, but they bring a lot to the economy. But there is a noise issue, and there's other abuses. And it's, again, it's a small minority that makes it tough on the rest.
Well, thank you for that comment. And got another question on transportation from Christopher in Manchester, who says, please update us on the Capital Rail Corridor into southern New Hampshire. Christopher says, I haven't heard much in a while. Should we expect to see any progress on this long-awaited project to help further strengthen our economy? Christopher, thank you. And Senator Susi, you first. I know Manchester is interested in this.
Manchester's very interested. A lot of towns and cities in the southern tier of the state are very interested. And I think a lot of people in general are very interested. As we continue to try to grow our economy and do things to attract more young people into our state and to enhance our workforce, transportation is a key issue. I mean, we're talking about people trying to use alternative vehicles on the road. The fact of the matter is a lot of younger people don't want to be on the road driving vehicles themselves. And commuter rail is something that most businesses in the southern tier feel would be a real boon. We are in the process of trying to move forward and studying it. I think the issue continues to be one of funding, and I think we're all very cautious about that. But there are opportunities to do a public-private partnership. There are ways to make rail feasible so that people can get back and forth from northern part of Massachusetts right into Nashua, Manchester, and we look forward to continuing that discussion.
So, Senator Morse, you're from Salem. It doesn't get much more southern tier than that. How do you feel about commuter rail? I know Nashua really wants it. Manchester's interested.
Well, I've always been a believer we should have brought it to Nashua, and that's where we should have tried it, because the one thing that's worked for the state of New Hampshire during my tenure of Route 93 being developed is our bus systems worked. And we certainly could make our bus system work to Nashua if that's where the rail was coming into New Hampshire. Beyond that, I think all these tax schemes that are going on that are hitting commuters, I mean, Massachusetts, we just heard from Governor Baker that 17 cents on the, you know, to hit on gas tax to solve climate change problems. Where's all this money going to come from, you know, if we continue to dilute the system? And rail would dilute the system. I mean, it certainly would be an expense that we'd have to subsidize. I don't see how you make that model work in a state our size.
I want to ask you all about a couple other subject areas. And again, I think commuter rail is something we're going to have to address fully in a full show. I noticed a couple bills about animal cruelty. In general, Speaker Shurtleff, I'll turn to you first. What's the focus of these bills? Where do these concerns come from?
Representative Catherine Rogers from Concord has been a strong advocate for animal protection ever since she's been a member of the New Hampshire House. And I'm anxious to see what the policy committees, whether it be Environment and Agriculture or Judiciary or whatever committees they end up going to, has to say about the bills that are introduced. We know there's a problem. We had the terrible incident in Wolfboro just a couple of years ago that animals are being abused in the Grand State.
It was the Great Dane case.
Absolutely, which caused that town to spend millions on that issue. And so I look forward to seeing how the committees address these bills. I think I commend Representative Rogers for doing the strong work she does in protection of New Hampshire animals. And it is an issue in the Granite State.
All right. Well, thank you, Christopher, for that email about commuter rail. And here's another email. This is from State Representative Deborah Altshuler, taking issue with something that was said earlier. She says, I'm the prime sponsor of HB 687 and emphatically stress that neighbors are not able to file nuisance complaints and have someone's guns taken away. This is a fear-mongering talking point. The penalties for false reports are as serious as non-compliance with the court order. So, Representative Altshuler, thank you for weighing in. And Representative Packard, that was your comment. And she's saying, no, you didn't characterize it correctly. I just wonder what you think there.
Well, I disagree. I guess we're, you know, that's one of the subject matters that we're going to disagree on, you know, pretty much down party line. And I just totally disagree with her statement.
All right. And we will have to cover that in a later program, I think. But for now, we'll set it aside. Another category, all of you, that I noticed a lot of bills, in addition to taxes and animal cruelty, and a lot of bills on ATVs, as you said, Representative Packard, is redistricting, voting. Democrats tried last year to reverse several Republican-sponsored voting bills. Senator Susie, I'll start with you, but anybody jump in, please. What's on tap for this year in terms of voting laws? Lots of proposals out there.
There continue to be a lot of proposals. I think the fundamental issue is ensuring that people who are in New Hampshire have the opportunity to vote right here in New Hampshire, and that we don't put up obstacles and provide scare tactics, particularly for young people that are in college that want to register to vote and want to participate in democracy.
So you're trying to reverse, I think it was SB3 and HB 1264.
Both of those bills, and they're the subject of litigation. That's ongoing. And I do want to get back to the one issue, though, that I think has bipartisan support. Unfortunately, our governor didn't support it, and that's redistricting. That's a fundamental voting rights issue to allow voters to select their politicians. And I really hope that this time around that bipartisan support is even stronger so that if need be, we override a veto. That's a very important issue, I think, to people across the state.
This is a nonpartisan, outside redistricting commission that can redraw the lines without supposedly one party dominating the process.
That's correct.
Senator Morse, I'd love your thoughts, too, on all the voting bills that we see before the legislature this year.
Well, one thing I want to make clear is that just this past Friday, we had in fiscal an item where we were defending the state of New Hampshire in the court system, and the fiscal committee decided to remove that money from the attorney general's budget. There's been a long-standing understanding in the state of New Hampshire that we fund what the attorney general comes before us. I don't think in all the years I've been in government that we haven't done that. So I think as whether it's this issue where we have some disagreement, but we agree on the same, you know, the basic philosophies that the Senate president said we agree on. And how we get there is, I think, where we disagree. But I don't think New Hampshire should change how it governs based on the fact that a few people think that, you know, if we make things so partisan, you know, we can stop things. And I think that's wrong.
Speaker Shurtleff?
Yeah, I'm glad Senator Morse brought that up, the fiscal committee holding back money for the time being from the attorney general to pursue these cases in the state courts. There are two bills in question, and to date, New Hampshire has spent, I believe, is $1.3 million in prosecuting these civil cases. This is legislation passed by the House and Senate, passed into law, to provide for voter rights, especially for those in college communities. And I think there's a concern on the fiscal committee that so much money is being spent on these lawsuits. I don't think there's ever been a time if the attorney general comes back and says we expended funds for something that they haven't been reimbursed, and possibly in this case as well. It's not a closed subject, but the fact that we're spending over $1 million is money not being well spent.
I have to ask all of you about an issue that isn't a bill before you right now, but is of concern to all state leaders, and that's the class action lawsuit against the state over allegations of abuse at the state-run juvenile detention facility. Obviously, this is a lawsuit, so you can't comment on details, but I do want to go down the line. So, Senator Susie, starting with you, what's your reaction to this? Were you surprised? What protections would you like to see, you know, put for children at that facility right now? Because you guys are state leaders, so you'll be at least keeping an eye on this. So go ahead, Senator Susie, please.
Well, the allegations, if proven true, are absolutely alarming. I think that we have taken steps both through this budget and a series of pieces of legislation to shore up DCYF and to make sure that there are more child protections in place and more oversight of child protection. But as you said, this is a lawsuit, and I believe that if those allegations proven true, there should be severe consequences for anyone that engages in behavior, particularly to children who are vulnerable.
Senator Morse?
I agree with the Senate President. I've served in the position of Senate President. I've dealt with this. I mean, you can't say it any stronger. New Hampshire should be better than this, and I certainly think we'll deal with it.
What's your role, Speaker Shurtleff, as a lawmaker, especially a leading lawmaker, in terms of following up on this?
I think the allegations are horrific. If they're proved to be true, which is a good possibility,
I'm outraged that these residents were abused at the Sununu Center. It's my understanding the allegations now are they're investigating the decade from 1990 to 2000. I'd like to see that broadened and to look at any possibility of any abuse of any child at the Sununu Center from 1990 onward and not just limited to that one decade.
Go ahead, Representative Packard. I want to give you an opportunity to weigh in.
It's just unacceptable. You know, and if the allegations turn out to be true, I mean, I agree with my three colleagues here that this is just unacceptable. This is not New Hampshire. This is not the way things should be done in New Hampshire. And, you know, these children are in there, and they need to be properly taken care of and not in any way, shape, or form abused.
Well, just to close out, I know this is a super busy week for you, especially, I think, for the House members. So, Representative Packard, you first. What's on your agenda today or later this week at the State House?
Well, we have a number of hearings in my committee. In fact, there's hearings that'll be starting this morning. Then we actually have some executive session. Then we get more hearings on Thursday. And
is that transportation?
Transportation. Yep. But, you know, we'll be looking at all the bills in the House Republican office that are in the different committees and seeing where we stand on them.
It's a lot to keep track of. There are a lot of bills. Speaker Shurtleff, how about you? What are you up to today?
Well, for the rest of this next couple of days, you know, the speaker is responsible for disciplining members when they may write something inappropriate on Facebook or do something that doesn't rise to the level of an ethics violation or to be censured by the House. I'm forming an 8-person committee for Democrats, 4 Republicans, with 2 co-chairs, 1 from each party, and I want to fill it out with members of that, fill the appointments of that committee out.
So you're looking at ethical issues and sort of how people talk and in person and
take it out of the
and
hands
online.
And make
advice
of the speaker.
Okay. Sorry, Senators. We're running out of time. Real quick, Senator Morse, what's tops on your agenda today?
Once again, the Senate's a full-time job for all the senators.
Sure. Yeah. Issues that you want to work on, that you're going to be working on especially this week?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't kidding when I said I'm concerned about the tax models, and I certainly am waiting for 140 bills to be announced in the Senate that I want to see what's in them.
Sure. Senator Susie.
Reestablishing and increasing New Hampshire's minimum wage, priority number one today.
Okay. All of you, thank you very much. We will be talking to you again as the session continues to roll out. I really appreciate everybody's time today. I know you're busy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.